This is How Men Think with Brooks Like and Gavin DeGraw, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Welcome to another episode of How Men Think. My name is Brooks Like, and I will be co-hosting today. And it's a super exciting day, a monumental day, because we have one man stepping up. He's been promoted from the minor leagues to the major leagues to co-host alongside me, Ryan.
That sounded good.
Hey, applause to you, buddy.
It was only a matter of time before I was promoted. You know, Gavin is not pulling his weight. He's not quite cutting it. Luckily, he's not here to defend himself. So I'm here to step up and, you know, be the face of this podcast.
This is a performance-driven podcast, and management has done a thorough review of your performance lately, and you've come out flying, so we've promoted you. We're going to test you on the first line here, see if you can handle the big minutes, and then we'll review you after this show.
I look forward to that. Thank you, Brooks.
But I'm super...
Always a pleasure.
I'm excited to have you, buddy. It's just you and I, and we also have Amy in studio with us, and then Easton's here as well. So super intimate group today.
You'll quickly find out why it's just the two of you.
And then that's it. And we're going to get into a serious conversation today. A few episodes back, we did a topic around me asking questions of fatherhood. And you weren't at that one because you were about to have your second baby. And I want to know what fatherhood is like. And now you've had your second baby. And now we're going to do a deep dive into what that is truly like. So can you give us a little backstory here? How long ago was your second baby born? And what do you have, boys, girls? Just give our listeners a little context here.
So our first son turned 2 about 5 weeks ago. And on that same week, our second son was born. So they're almost exactly 2 years apart. Our youngest is now 5 weeks old. And it's exhausting.
Truly exhausting? Are you just saying, like, as parents say, like, it's exhausting? Or is, like, can you unpack for somebody like me and Amy that do not have kids, by exhausting, like, what do you mean specifically?
I have so many emotions going through my head. On the one hand, I'm like, this is everything you've ever wanted, right? Especially when you go through IVF, it's like you made the conscious decision to have another kid. We now have a second perfectly healthy, happy son, and that is everything my wife and I have always wanted. Now, what I have come to find out in the last 5 weeks is that it is man on man, and it's dividing and conquering, and I'm trying to work a full-time job, trying to maintain a marriage, trying to keep my 2-year-old happy and running around, and keep a 5-week-old from getting sick from the 2-year-old, and a million things that it's like, sleep is very minimal. There is no social life. It's a lot. Like, I'm at my wit's end, quite frankly. Like, I'm on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I mean that, seriously.
Wow. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you sharing. First off, I want to acknowledge you and your wife just for being parents. To me, that's something I yearn for in my life. I can't wait. It's something greater than any professional success or anything I could ever have. I really want to be, the goals in my life that I had, the biggest things in my life were to be a loving husband and a father one day. So I want to acknowledge you for being parents. I look up to parents, have the utmost respect for parents. So that's why I want to ask you all this stuff, is I want to learn, I want to try and prepare myself. But when you say sleep is like almost non-existent, can you unpack that for us? Like, how much would you sleep a night?
Typically, I mean, well, we slept trained our 2-year-old when he was like 3.5 months, which is pretty early. But by night 3, we had him sleeping 11 to 12 hours a night. And he's done that since 3.5 months till 2 years old. So we knew, my wife and I, that was our sanity. We knew at 7 o'clock, he was going to go down after we began the bedtime routine at like 20 of, did the pajamas, did the books, did the teeth brushing, all that. Put him down at 7. We retreated to the living room, poured a cocktail, a glass of wine, had our dinner, watched our show, like 2 hours of just us time catching up. That was very important for our sanity and for our marriage.
Yep.
Now we go through that same bedtime routine, but one of us has to be holding a baby who's, you know, not comfortable or hungry or tired or cranky or whatever, while our two-year-old wants both of us present to be doing the full bedtime routine he's now become accustomed to over the course of 2 years. And we put him to bed finally, and then we retreat to the living room where we now have an infant, or a newborn who needs to be breastfed, where my wife is trying to juggle like holding a plate of food while she's shoveling down that food. And like, it's just a million things going on that we never have time to kind of like decompress. There's always someone needing us to help keep them alive or put them to bed or feed them or whatever. And it begins to wear on you over a period of time. And I would say is like, I approach this from a pragmatic standpoint, I think, which is like, how can we divide and conquer and both kind of not spread ourselves so thin? So because my wife is getting up every hour and a half, that's the one thing with our newborn. He's great. He's a great baby, not colicky, whatever. He is needing to be fed. They call it cluster feeding, but like he's needing to be fed every 90 minutes for 24 hours a day, every 90 minutes. And that feeding takes about 30 minutes to do. So if you do the math,
60 minutes in between.
Correct. And so we began in the first few nights where he was in a, what they call a dock and tot, which is like a little padded bumper mini thing that was between the two of us in our king size bed. He would lay in there. She would set her alarm or hear him waking up, feed him. And I was on the other side of him waking up every time she woke up because she had to turn the lights on low and like begin the feeding, then do the burping, change him. That whole thing is like a whole process where I was waking up every time she did. And I said to her, this is not efficient and it's just not, it doesn't make sense. So I think I should sleep in another room so as to like have one of us getting sleep. And then I'll pick up a bottle feed for the first feed so you can sleep and I'll do that in my room and vice versa, right?
Did you guys do that on the first child?
The first child, we did not. Well, I eventually slept in another room, yes, like after the first week or two, because for the same reason, it was just like
up,
there was no reason for both of us to be up. And she was like, you had to go to work and, you know, there's no sense of both of us being up, which I appreciated. The other thing is like, he's like, you'll find that babies, they're constantly like choking a little bit during their sleep or they're struggling to breathe through their nose. And like, I'm laying there, never fully asleep.
Yeah,
like I'm laying
alert.
There like... did he just stop breathing? Because it doesn't sound like he's breathing. And then finally, like, clears it. And while the pediatrician's like, they have the best gag reflex ever, like, they'll never choke, they'll be fine. Your human instinct is you're laying there and you're like, can I fully fall asleep right now? Or do I need to make sure my son is not dying?
Yeah. Wow.
So then you're never getting that REM sleep, which, as we know, is very important. So here's where we go. So I say, okay, I'm going to sleep in the other room. We have a 3-bedroom house. Our guest room, I had to take the guest bed down before our new son was born and make that our second nursery. The one bedroom is my first son's. Now the second guest bedroom has become the second nursery. So I don't have a guest bed in there anymore.
Okay.
So I had to make a trip to Costco to get an air mattress that I've been now sleeping on for 5 weeks. My back is killing me, but I'm trying to get sleep. And
we got to get rid of that air mattress. Where did your mattress go that was in the spare bedroom?
The air mattress has a USB port, though. It's an AeroBed.
Who cares
I'm
about
amazed
that?
By that. I can charge my iPhone in it.
Who cares,
which is pretty
about
cool.
That? Who cares? Where did your spare mattress from your second bedroom go?
I had to
sell it?
No, I bought a shed and then had our handyman guy come build it with his son, and I paid more in labor than I did for the freaking shed itself, which drives me insane. But that's in the backyard now with the bed and the mattress and everything put away.
You got to go wherever. So this is my advice, cuz I've slept here. When I bought my house in DC, I had no bed. The first thing I bought for my house was a set of drums. And
of
I
course. Who are you, Matthew McConaughey? Yeah,
I slept on a inflatable, like, blow-up mattress for like a week because I didn't have a bed yet. And then I was like, it was terrible. It was just awful. Yeah. And then I finally bought a bed. And so knowing how bad I felt at that time, you've been sleeping on one 5 weeks. I'm coming over today to hit that, like stab that thing with a knife so that you can't sleep on it. And I'll haul your mattress from your shed back into your house. You have to have a good mattress.
Yeah, we bought a day bed, so we have a new crib in there. We have a day bed, but the day bed will become my firstborn's regular bed when he gets out of the crib. But the mattress is super, super soft, which is not good for my back.
Okay, answer this. Can we get your mattress from the shed into the house in place of where the blow-up mattress is?
No, there's not enough room. There's not enough room. Yeah,
we'll solve the mattress problem. Keep going. Okay. I will solve that. So, we have tons of sponsors. Casper, we got the mattress.
Okay. Casper, are you listening?
Casper, get this man a bed.
So the other issue, so my wife is like, look, we had a come to Jesus moment the other week where she was like, Ryan, I got to be honest, like we have no connection or physical touch with one another at all. We're kind of like two ships passing in the night. She acknowledges that we're both trying to keep these kids alive and we're doing the best we can, but we're kind of like coexisting in many ways, which is tough mentally.
Yeah.
And then the flip side is like, she's like, look, I feel like you haven't been very present with the baby. Like, I'm just being honest. I feel like you're not there with him. Like he's constantly attached to me. And like, you wanted to have this kid just as much as I did. And you're not really like doing much with him, like, which hurts. And I said, I get it. I actually acknowledge you're absolutely right that I'm not doing as much with him. There's two reasons for doing so. The first of which is, my milk hasn't come in yet, and I'm not lactating, so I have the...
I bet she thoroughly enjoyed that sarcasm.
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
I said, I don't have the ability to breastfeed, which you do, and so I am looking at what strengths I have and what are your weaknesses. You're breastfeeding every hour, and I can take our son, our two-year-old, out to the park and like run. He wants to run around. The kid's got so much energy. Like, she can't do that. So I'm with him all day, like on the weekends, dividing and conquering. So it's not that I don't love our baby. It's really like, I'm just trying to cater to my strengths, which are the ability to deal with a two-year-old who wants to run around and just like not sit still.
Are you having issues bonding with the baby? A lot of men do.
I do. I feel honestly like, and it happened last night, like when I've now been more proactive in saying like, let me hold him, especially because the two-year-old wants just mom to do so much that she used to do that she now can't. So when I hold the baby, he's never, I don't know if it's a maternal instinct that I would obviously lack, but he's not, I can't get him comfortable. Like, she can like position him in a way that like he can just like fall asleep and be comfortable. I don't have that ability. So I am like constantly on edge. And this weekend she said to me, she's like, it's important for me to like be able to like, I'm in the house like 24 hours a day. Sometimes like I need to be able to get out for my own sanity. So she went to yoga and she did it when both of them were awake, not when our 2-year-old was napping. And I had one on two and it was severe anxiety. Like, the baby was constantly crying. The 2-year-old wanted to do crayons and this and that, wanted to go outside, play with the water table, wanted to go to the park. I can't do all those things. And I'm like looking at the clock being like, what time is yoga over? What time is she going to be home? Like, when can this end? Yeah.
So here's a question. Thank you for sharing, buddy. This is real stuff. Like, this is Brian's life going on. Might sound silly, but I just don't know. What can you do with a 5-month or 5-week-old as a man? Can you bottle feed it? Like, you mentioned bottle. Can you do that multiple times? Can they only do it once?
Okay.
I just don't know.
Good question. So here's where we are. You can, yes, you can bottle feed them. Now, with this child, my wife has elected not to pump her breast milk. Why? Because that 1-hour turnaround that you just mentioned, that then becomes like a half hour, because if you're pumping as well, you're spending another half hour to pump for a bottle to store the milk. So you're getting even less sleep. So what she has elected that we do is to supplement one bottle a day, my nighttime feed, with formula.
Okay.
So I have formula that I do at like midnight. I go in and give him that formula bottle. Now, the issue is, I have said to her, I'm like, look, I want to help out. I'm happy to do this and like sleep less and do the bottle feed so that you can get like a decent chunk of time that you can sleep.
Yeah.
Because mentally her thing is like, she goes to bed and knows I have to now wake up in an hour and a half, or then she's looking at the clock being like, I need to fall asleep now. I need to fall asleep now, which is like a vicious cycle because you then finally are about to fall asleep and you're like, great, I'm going to get 30 minutes and then you're up again and you can't function. But the issue that I raised, and maybe I'm a bad person for doing so, is simply like, I have to go to a like job at an office all day. And that's not to say you don't have a job being home and like how, like keeping these kids alive and doing everything you're doing. I'm not here to belittle that, but I also have to go into an office and like lead a meeting and go have like 15 people in a room where I'm trying to sell them on a vision or an idea and be charismatic and like convincing and articulate. And I can't do that if I am getting up every, you know, and only having 4 hours of sleep. My body won't function that way. And and by the way, our livelihood depends on my ability to do exactly that. So like without, if I'm inadequate in my job, I can't pay for anything for like our
home.
And
you have no family here, right?
We have no family at all. No, none in LA that can help. And Amy is my pseudo therapist.
I offered help and you ignored it though. You don't like help.
I don't, because then I'm going to owe you.
You don't owe me. But this is where that comes up. I offered.
No, you did. I realized I didn't text you back. Amy's my pseudo shrink in that Amy, her philosophy though is like, just throw money at it.
Sure,
and it's like the night nurse thing is like, anyone listening around the country outside of LA or maybe New York right now is like, a night nurse? Like, sack up. You know, like, plenty
of
people
have done
this with
more kids. But I offered other suggestions too. I was like, let me bring dinner over so that it's one less thing to have to deal with. But you're very hesitant to take help.
Yeah.
I don't know what Brooks thinks, but you sure need it.
I also reached out to him and said, can I help in any way with anything? And our friend Joe Smith, he just had their third boy. And I asked him the same thing. Can I help with anything? He's like, I don't know, man. But you shut me down. You said, no, you can't help with anything because then I would owe you one. And Joe was like, I don't know, anything helps. And so I sent Joe a couple $100 on Postmates so that he wouldn't have to make supper. His wife wouldn't have to make supper. He could just order something in a couple times.
You need to let people help.
Wouldn't even ask. They would just send, Brooks.
Okay. You said send flowers. That was actually your response. If you want something, send me flowers. Have you asked anybody during this, the birth of your second boy, these last 5 weeks, have you asked anybody for some assistance?
No.
Brooks will talk about this, but you seem pretty emotional. Like, let it out. What are you feeling about all this?
Well, like the other thing that my wife said to me, and again, this is not a knock on her, like we're having these come to Jesus moments, but she was like, her biggest thing is, she's like, look, from 3 a.m. till 6 a.m. every day, she's like, I do the feed and he won't go back to sleep. Like, she's like, I'm holding him. He, like, I try to hold a pacifier in his mouth. He won't go back to sleep. And she's like, so I am up now, like from 3 a.m. for the rest of the day. And she said, the only way I can get him to fall asleep, and we bought this thing called the Snoo, which is like high tech, like rocks them in the crib and has like motion sensors and stuff. That thing doesn't work. I hope they're not a sponsor, because if they are, they're done. But it's a complete joke. So, I mean, that thing has like microphones in it that does swooshing noises. And like if it hears it crying, it picks up the speed with which it rocks them. And it's a joke.
You're better just putting the kid on top of the dryer in the
I have no idea thing. What he's talking about right now.
Don't do that at home. Don't put him on the dryer, but it's the same.
But so she's like, look, the only way I've been able to get him to sleep is like if I put him on my chest, and he's been falling asleep on my chest, and like I've been falling asleep too, but it's dangerous. And I'm like, well, are you in the middle of the bed? She's like, I mean, as much as I can be, I guess. But like, I'm like, well, what if you crushed him or he fell off? And she's like, yeah. So like, it would be great if you helped me out for part of that, if you can. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I can do that, because then I will not be sleeping at all. And she said, well, as long as you're okay with, you know, the potential of him falling, I guess I'll continue to just have him on my chest. And I'm like, so are you trying to like cover your bases here? Like, I have to sign off now that if he falls off the bed and like onto the floor, that there's like I've signed off, or like because and that if that happens, it's because I've elected to choose sleep over the well-being of my son.
What if you just put like blow-up mattresses all around the bed?
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. With your first boy, did he also sleep in the bed with you for 5 weeks or however long after he was born? And is that, if so, is it, what is customary for a new parent? Does the baby sleep in the bed with the parents, or does it sleep in a different room?
Not a different room. Like newborns,
really?
For the first few months, you're definitely in the room, A, and B, we're not
what
crazy
like
parents, if you want to call them that, that like had our kids sleeping with us for very long. It was like for the first 3 months in a little padded thing where they just lay on their back and they're swaddled. And that's just for ease of being able to, like, you're up so much that you just lean over and you get them. We have a bassinet next to the bed as well. That's just not as convenient.
Usually stay in the bassinet in the room for the first few months.
A bassinet is just like a crib? It's like a sleeping thing?
Yeah, it's like a little oval thing that's elevated.
Could you afford help?
To me,
it just sounds like you need help.
I understand that. Like, but help meaning having a night nurse that you're paying $30 an hour to for...
No, what about someone during the day?
We have a nanny. That's the other thing. Like, we have a nanny from 8:30 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon that has been dealing, that I have signed off on and been like all about from the very beginning. From the time just before my wife gave birth to our second, we have a nanny that's there with my 2-year-old son, who takes him out of the house at 8:30, feeds him, puts him down at 12:30, and he wakes up from his nap at like 2:30. And then my wife has two kids from 2:30 till I get home.
So here's a question to you. What would be the biggest thing that would help you guys right now?
The biggest thing would without a doubt be a large monetary contribution from you.
Other than that.
Secondly, Casper, are you listening?
How's your sex
life? How's my sex life? As I said, it's like we are coexisting. Like it's tough. And
like, are you being affectionate or intimate or anything?
After we had a talk about like, even just like hugging each other, which again, it sounds so simple, but, and I was dreading this whole conversation because Brooks is going to sit here being like, you need to suck her toes and make her feel loved. But point being, it's like, it's easy to just say that in theory now, like as a Monday morning quarterback, like, oh, no, you need to make time for yourselves and like tell her that you love her, even if it's just 1 minute, which I can hear Brooks about to say.
No.
And it's making me nauseous.
No, not at all, buddy.
Thank you. But it's just tough, like, because you're just trying to juggle everything. And yeah, I'm not, and we need to be better about that. And we acknowledge that. And we, in 2 weeks, are going to take the baby, just the two of us, away for 2 nights. And my father-in-law is going to fly in from Denver and watch our 2-year-old for 2 nights, which is like, from a mental standpoint, something to look forward to is huge.
That's awesome. And by the way, no, I have absolutely zero judgment or anything on that part of, like, on the relationship part of this, because even in my wife and I, we don't have kids. But even careers can pull us apart.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine having a 2-year-old and a 5-week-old sleeping. You guys know how much I love sleep. Like, sleep to me is everything. And all of a sudden that's like destroyed for both of you guys. And then trying to connect on top of that. I can't imagine how difficult that would be. And that doesn't mean that you guys don't love each other immensely. Just like the factors contributing to lack of energy, lack of like all of that.
You're a third of the way through hell. Here's the other thing.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
When does that come?
You touch upon two things though. You and I are alike in that, and my wife acknowledged it last week. She's like, I just realized like you need more sleep to function than me. Like, and I do. Like, I was used to like going from like 9:30 PM falling asleep till like 6 AM and like I needed that.
8+, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you love most in life is the ability to work out, which my routine up until the newborn was I would work out every morning before work. And now I started, for my mental sanity, like that's a huge thing to like sweat and work out. Yeah. And then you lose that because you're sleep you have to prioritize over being able to work out. And then the other times I've tried to set my alarm for an hour earlier than I typically would get up to get my two-year-old up to get his breakfast done. Like now I'm working out on like 4 hours of sleep and
it sucks. Yeah. And it's
impossible.
Yeah. You're half there. You're half not. You're just like trying to survive. Yeah. Literally is what it feels like versus like, yeah, this makes me feel good. I'm energized. I feel energetic, feeling confident. Let's go to work. Boom. I'm on, I'm dialed in at work. I can't imagine what that's like, man. I'm really like empathizing here with you. But good news is we have somebody that's going to help you with this.
And it's not,
is it Gavin?
It's not Brooks and me.
Yeah. We're going to call our family and relationship therapist, Gavin DeGraw, to weigh in on what it's like to be married with two young kids. We'll get to our help for you, my friend, right after this break. Back from break. This is a special fatherhood edition of How Men Think, and I want to thank you.
Ryan called it a birth control edition.
Yeah, he did. He messaged me. He's like, this is going to be birth control for you, Brooks. You're not going to want to have kids after this conversation. But I want to acknowledge you, buddy, for being raw and vulnerable, because a lot of people would say, oh, having kids is just the greatest, and that's just like, that's all they would say. But the point of this show is to dig in deep to men's emotions, what we really truly are going through. And so I want to acknowledge you for opening up and sharing that vulnerable area of your life.
Thank you.
I commend you. And as I said before the break, we have some help here to assist you, to help you get through this. It's not Casper. We don't have a bed coming yet, but we'll work on that. But we do have Dr. Chris Taylor coming on. A special guest. He's a licensed therapist. Chris is a nationally recognized expert on family issues, having spent over 17 years working directly with parents and their families. He's a highly sought out speaker. He's also an author of the book Back to Basics. It's a parenting program, husband, father. This man can do it all. We're going to bring him on right now to help you out, my friend. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you guys doing?
Great. Appreciate you coming on. We got Ryan here ready for you.
Hey, Chris.
And he's a train wreck, Chris. He's a real hot mess.
Chris,
well, it hurts when I hear it firsthand.
Chris, can you give us a little bit, and our listeners, a little bit on your background? I give you a brief intro there, but can you tell us a little bit more about your presence in this space?
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered a lot of it in that intro. Just working with families for the past 17 years and just kind of everything that goes into that. So I'm sure you guys have talked a lot before you brought me on. You know, especially issues of being a dad, just the stresses and real life day-to-day struggles that we all go through and trying to figure out that kind of maze of, you know, there's the books, what to do, and then there's the real life of how do you actually do that. And I think what happens is most of the time, it's not in the book. And so what do you do when you kind of pick up that manual and what you need to do isn't in there. So I speak on these issues. Obviously I do my private practice therapy with families that are struggling with a lot of these same things. And it's really my passion, my mission. So I'm happy to be on with you guys to come talk about some of these things.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate your time. You are aware of Ryan's situation, all that's going on, two-year-old, five-week-old, trouble sleeping, trouble connecting with his wife, just kid, two-year-olds running crazy. What advice, where would you start with somebody like Ryan for any of us other listeners that might have young kids? Like, where would be the first place that you would look at in the scope of him and his wife's life?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, because I think, you know, especially as men, we always try to be the Superman, the do-it-all, the fixers. But really what you have to start with is yourself, and ask yourself, like, are you taking care of your own individual needs as a human being before you can give as a father or husband? And those are really kind of basic ways to do that, right? Just getting outside the house, making sure you're carving out some time to do things that you enjoy, whether, you know, getting on the course and hitting some golf balls or, you know, joining a bowling league. I know that's kind of cliche, but just those things that break free of that normal sort of day-to-day can be super helpful, so that when we go back into the stressful situations, we feel more, you know, sort of recharged and able to deal with those stresses as they come.
Can I just jump in?
I don't know.
If Ryan, and excuse my language, but if Ryan went to the golf course right now, his wife would literally be like, my husband is a dick. Like, he sucks. So how is he supposed to do that without her just
blowing up on
Well, the other interesting thing to that point, Chris, which I think is a very fair point, especially with golf, which is like a 4-hour endeavor, but she would be perfectly okay with me going to play golf so long as it was reciprocated with her being able to go do whatever she wants to do for the same amount of time that I went to do it. So what I would be thinking to myself would be the joy that I would have on that golf course would be severely overshadowed by the misery I would experience when I was alone with the two kids and having to keep them alive. Like, it's not worth it to me. I'd rather be in kind of like purgatory where I'm consistently slightly miserable and not like, like in the deep, deep valley. Seriously.
Is it?
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I think that vulnerability piece, you know, to talk through those with your wife, to just name it, you know, is I have this guilt for my own personal enjoyment because I feel like there's a punishment that's going to come on the other side. And it's hard because you're naming that punishment as time with your family, right? Or time with your kids. But saying that because I'm so burnt around the edges right now, that's what it feels like to me. It feels like I literally have nothing to give. When I'm in it just nonstop, it feels like I'm under attack. And I have none of that time to really be present in any one area of my life. So, you know, I mean, just describing it as that purgatory like you just did, I think is super important. It's going to be hard for her to hear, but I think that realness and the authenticity is you have to go there. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're just sort of playing a game and crushing yourself in the process. And, you know, for your wife, for you, for your kids, in the long run, that's not going to be good for anybody.
You, one of our very first How Men Think episodes, you touched on that. You said you had like man guilt anytime you went away.
Yeah.
On a business trip or a guy's trip or something, you said you couldn't even really enjoy yourself. You didn't want to come home and say, I had the best time ever because you felt guilty about it.
Yeah, I want to downplay how good or fun it was if I know that she wasn't having as much fun while home.
But on this side, you're saying on this agreement that Chris proposed, she would also have this turn up for herself. So maybe at home during the time you were away, maybe she was like juggling the two kids, but she knows she's got X amount of hours coming up tomorrow or the next day or something where she gets to go to yoga or meditation or have lunch with a friend, whatever her chosen activity would be.
Yeah. I just know I would be on that golf course. I'd be okay. We're on the back nine now. We're around the bend, that much closer to me, but doing double duty with two kids. Like,
you
I'm spraying balls all over the place because I'm losing my mind at what I'm about to be in for.
Could you do 4 hours with the two kids? Could
no,
you couldn't pull it off.
I mean, would they live? Yes. Would I just be miserable? Yeah. Like, I think once. If the easiest thing for me and what she, my wife typically does is she will go to yoga or do whatever she wants to do over a nap for the 2-year-old, which is like a 2.5-hour nap. I can man on man, I'm fine, but it's having the two is difficult for me. And look, credit to her because when I'm away late at night for work or overnight somewhere for work, she's doing both the entire time, you know, doing the bedtime routine for both of them. So it is possible, but maybe it's my inability to have a maternal instinct or familiarity doing it so many times that I'm not as comfortable.
Chris, is it typical? Yeah, Ryan's not bonding with the baby as much. Is that typical? He's much closer with the 2-year-old and having a better relationship.
Far closer with my 2-year-old. But yeah, I don't bond as much with the baby, Chris, because I feel like I'm not as equipped to, you know, keep the baby happy as my wife. So I choose to deal with the 2-year-old who I know exactly how to make happy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally reasonable and very common that you would have that experience because we're not sort of built to bond at that time with infants in the same way that the mother is. I mean, you just look at breastfeeding, unless you're going to start trying to do that with your kid, you're in a whole nother ballgame with what you're able to do. And I think, you know, dad's role is typically as that play partner, right? As that stimulator of imaginary play, of excitement, of sort of outside stuff, of adventure. And that only comes online when that kid really starts to be more mobile and active. a lot of guys that I talk to start talking about their fantasies of like when my kid is 10 years old or when they're 11 years old, they can start being on a field or they can start being involved in other activities. And that's where they really feel like that relationship is going to come alive. And I think because it does become more of a relationship then where you can engage in communication, you can have those, you know, sort of deep down core value talks and, you know, kind of bestow that wisdom that, you know, that we all as men kind of want to give to our kids. So, and I think that's part of it too, not guilting yourself and shaming yourself for, well, something's wrong with me because I can't, there's my infant, this is my child, and I should be just in this like constant state of euphoria. I think you have to be raw and honest and say, no, there's times when I look at that kid and I think, you're the reason that me and my wife aren't close. You're the reason I'm not getting my free time. And it's not that you're attacking your child or blaming it or wanting any ill will towards it. It's just that you're being honest within yourself about what that deeper, you know, emotion really is.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm curious what you think about is when I get home from work and it's, you know, there are times when it's like my wife has just dealt with the two kids and they've been a nightmare and she is at her wit's end, fried. And it's that very common situation where the wife, then you walk in the door and before you can put your stuff down, the baby is handed to you. And it's like, I've been dealing with this. Hold the baby. Now you need to deal with it. And in my, what I've said vocally is like, I have just been at work all day and I also need a break. So for me to come home after being at work all day and immediately jump right into this is like, it's just, it's daunting. It's like when, so then you're, I'm constantly saying, okay, get to 7 o'clock because that's when the 2-year-old goes down and then you'll have a little relief. But you're looking at the clock the entire day saying 5 hours till 7 o'clock, 4 hours till 7 o'clock. And it's tough.
Yeah. And again, I would say that's the common experience. You know, we think that it's this like this other side of things where we're just so happy and here, let me help you and you go take your break and I can just. But no, you know, we're kind of miserable. We feel like we lost that earlier part of our lives. We feel scared that we're never going to get that back. We look at that need for physical contact and intimacy with our wives, and she's backing away from us because she's like, I just need to retreat. I need to go take care of myself. And you're then stuck in that role of like, well, I either have to do everything and just fake my way through it, or, you know, I don't think there is kind of another or for a lot of men. They just do that.
That's what I wanted to ask. I feel like it's the elephant in the room. Do you have a lot of clients where this is when the man strays from the marriage?
What do you mean by strays?
Cheats.
Yeah, I think it's the stress of it because it's such a game changer for relationships. And especially when it's your second, you know, you feel like, okay, we conquered the mountain, right? We climbed to the mountaintop. We got through it. And then you're seeing like this light at the end of the tunnel, right? It's like the water at the edge of the desert. And then you get to it and boom, you add the other one in. And it's like, this is never going to end. This is just going to be my life. And I think all of that like replaying of nostalgia and like the single man syndrome that we're like, grass is greener, that all comes into play. And especially when there's that breakdown in intimacy, sure, you go to work or you're at a coffee shop and that attractive woman gives you a smile from across the way. And it's sort of that like, hey, wow, somebody sees me for value other than, or maybe I could engage in this life different than, and, you know, it can spread like wildfire in our minds because we're so susceptible to needing that validation.
So how do you bring back the intimacy in a marriage?
Let me say, Amy, that is not happening to me. Chris, Amy began when I walked into the studio today by telling me I look horrible. So there's not a single female in the country that has given me remotely a look of anything. So.
You don't look great. I'm not going to lie. But how
you being hideous is a good thing in this case,
yeah,
right?
It's working for his wife for sure. So how, when there's poop and diapers and breastfeeding and no one's sleeping and all these things, how do you even have intimacy in a relationship with all that sort of, it just sounds,
yeah, it suffers. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think that's when you enter into the, you know, let's get a babysitter, let's get a parent, let's get somebody that can help us out, at least just for a few hours. Get outside the house, go on a date, get to know the person again outside of the diapers and the feedings and the lack of sleep. Even if it's like, I don't want to get dressed up and go somewhere nice, can we just go sit somewhere away from this? And then there's the sort of cliche rule of you talk nothing about kids, you talk nothing about work, right? You really treat it almost like it's a first date, and you try to stimulate that sort of romantic appeal. I get it that you go back into the house and you're kind of back into that stress and the breakdown is still there. But with enough attention to each other, I think you can at least start to key in on the emotional intimacy. And, you know, over a little bit of time, that's going to lead back to that physical intimacy returning. So there's not an easy solution for it, but it's giving you guys both permission to step away at the same time and nurture your relationship. Because without a strong, you know, marriage and parental unit, I mean, the kids are going to suffer. You guys are going to suffer. It's not good for anybody. So I know that's when guilt comes back around and kind of, you know, tries to bite you again. But it's like, hey, like, what are we really doing? Are we trying to sacrifice literally ourselves and our marriage for our kids? Or are we trying to strengthen ourselves that although at times may feel like we're sacrificing the kids, we're really not? Because I think, you know, especially as kids get older, they need that break from parents as much as parents need the break from them. So
I love that. I think that's, I was once told, friends gave me advice once, and I asked parents about this because I think it's, I'm curious on how parents look at it. I was told, when you have kids, make sure that you put your partner first. Because if you and your partner are strong, the home will be strong and the kids will have a permanently strong home. Versus if you constantly put kids first, kids first, kids first, the parents are going to drift apart. And maybe that leads, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's not next year, but maybe it's a couple years down the road to a divorce or loss of connection or something. But I've asked a lot of parents this question, and the answers honestly are like 50-50. Some are like, no, my wife and I, we put our kids first. And some are like, yes, we put each other first and strengthen our relationship. And kids are tough. They're okay if they don't go to the park today or something. But as long as we're strong, the home will be strong. Which way do you lean, Ryan? You have kids. So actually, like, which way do you lean?
As long as we're strong.
Well, it's not like you're not going to feed your 5-year-old, like, or 5-month-old or 5-week-old. Jeez. You have to do that. But like, I agree with what you said, Chris.
Yeah.
Like, do you agree with that as well? Or which way do you look at it?
I do agree with it, but like, I'll give you an example. I'll be completely real for a second. Like, we went through IVF. So when you go through IVF, you cannot have sex over the course of IVF because you're being pumped with hormones. You're doing shots into your stomach with estrogen, all sorts of stuff. So you're not allowed to have sex because it's dangerous for, there's so many follicles that are being stimulated. You're at the risk of having multiples. So you can't have sex. So I think we are in a position where that began a year ago, where you go through a long, long IVF over a year ago cycle of like, you lose that intimacy or sex part of your marriage.
Yeah.
Per doctor's orders, legitimately. And then you finally get pregnant, and it was a tough pregnancy. And, you know, my wife did not feel great quite often. And so when you don't feel great and you're pregnant, you're not really clamoring to have sex. And so then you go through that whole pregnancy, and then you give birth. And when you give birth, things happen where you have to be dormant again post childbirth so that everything heals properly. And it's like, you look at the calendar, and that's a long run of a lack of intimacy for good reason. And maybe Amy's going to tell me I'm making an excuse, but like,
no, I'm not.
That really, and my wife and I have just talked about it. Like, that is tough too for a marriage. And again, like, that was the cards that was dictated for us because we had to adhere to certain rules.
I think it's really tough.
But like, that is very trying, and it's tough to feel like you're not just cohabitating and coexisting in a household when you haven't had the ability to be that intimate for all the reasons I just laid out. So that weighs on both of us. It's a two-way street. Like, it weighs on us, and that is very tough for me.
Mm-hmm. How would you go at that, Chris? Just the compounding, the year-long, year-plus-long journey, which lacks intimacy. How would you try and, I mean, you mentioned it about trying to get out of the house, but how would you go at that a little deeper?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, especially for men, because we crave that, you know, not to say that women don't, but men particularly crave that physical closeness. I think you try to achieve it by other means, you know, in the interim, with emotional intimacy, sharing vulnerabilities.
I thought you meant like with my iPad connection or something, but yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, emotional.
I mean, you can do that too. But
that's what came into my mind, like a little bit of sexting or something, just a little something.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to keep it interesting and keep it kind of flirty. And, you know, be cautious about developing the resentments of, like, what can't happen, and try to focus on maybe what you can do in the interim. You know, I mean, physical touch obviously comes in a lot of different forms. There's not just intercourse. I mean, there's,
mouth,
you know, there's
stuff.
Touch and... You know, when you say it like that, you had me at hello. But
I'm all for mouth stuff.
And I think you have to have that conversation. Like, look, I have these needs, and if these needs go unmet, like, it affects me emotionally. And taking that risk to share that from that perspective. And I would think that your wife, like, understands that and wants to be able to give that to you. Obviously, she has those restrictions because what her body's going through, and that's difficult for her. But also asking her, like, are there things that I can do for you physically that are stimulating that, you know, would give you that sense of connection?
Like mouth
we can't.
Stuff.
Well,
like mouth stuff.
Chris,
or,
Brooks is into sucking toes, just so you know, but we don't want to go down that path.
Wait, I have a weird...
I say you try it. Hey, if you're at a little stalemate here, I say you try something, buddy.
I have a weird IVF question. So if you're not allowed to have sex during IVF, are you allowed to have a, you know what?
Other stuff?
The O word?
O word?
Like, is the woman allowed to have...
an orgasm?
Yeah.
You're not... No, you're not.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh. Oof.
You basically just turn off. Like, you just, like, let's... That leads to my next question, Chris. I wanted to ask you, because I agree you can try those things. Is there also just another side of this where you just say, hey, this is a stage of life. Let's just battle and grind here. By the time the kid is 4 months old, he's going to be out of our bed and let's just champion this. It's not that much further. Like, do you ever just resign to that, or do you try keep working at trying to build this intimacy and keep that present, knowing that you're in this stage?
You always got to be working at it. I mean, you can't sort of ever admit defeat. This is just the way it's going to be. I mean, I think if you do go through those periods, because, you know, obviously in any marriage, there's going to be those rough patches, that you do a good job of communicating through it, of what the real deeper feelings are. I mean, maybe even things come up for a lot of us around rejection or abandonment. You know, we lean into a partner and we want that moment of connection, and they're tired, or, you know, they're frustrated about the kids and they pull away. We can feel that from a personal perspective of, you know, they're rejecting me because of me, and kind of lose track. So if we're even going as deep, you know, emotionally and from a place of vulnerability in that way to share, hey, you know, I'm feeling really rejected. I know it's not necessarily you doing that to me, but this is my emotional experience. I think those things can really bring couples closer and try to, you know, bridge those times where, you know, maybe it is 6 months, a year, 2 years, where there's just maybe not much, if any, of, you know, that sort of sexual connection. But I would never want a couple to resign to just, well, we're just going to kind of give up for the next 4 years, and that's not going to be a part of it, because it's not going to end well. I mean, yeah, I think we all know that.
But. And one of the things you said, Chris, I agree with, but I have a counter for you, which is me being completely real, which is, you know, you said, look, obviously doctors can dictate the inability to have sex for medical reasons and all that, but there are other ways and things that you can do. You said that I can go to my wife and say, like, look, here's what I'm lacking. Here's what I need. I know we can't have intercourse, but, like, here's what I need and what I'm missing. And I had that conversation, and we had that conversation, and she was completely receptive and, like, was appreciative that I came to her and said that and wanted to help and make sure that we connected on some level. And the issue became is, like, she felt... this was during the pregnancy. She felt so awful that in my head, I'm like, you know what? Who am I? Like, I'm going to, while she's feeling like she's going to puke all day, like, I'm going to come say, like, I have needs. Here are my needs. Like, you need to help me with my needs. It's like, I feel like that is a pretty selfish thing for me to do. So I'm sitting back saying, you know what, dude, screw your needs. Like, this is a period of time. She feels like crap. You know, respect that. And don't be demanding and asking her or laying out your needs. Like, this is not your time to do that.
I could give you another side on that. I could give you another side on that, that it might make her feel good to fulfill your needs. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. And like, we had that, like, that happened, but it also just was like a process of, like, it felt transactional, and that she felt so awful that I knew that it wasn't like she was like really excited
about.
Well,
I could give you some other ideas off air.
I'm great. Please do.
And I think too, like going to that second level of like sharing that other experience of what you might think she's thinking through that process, and not assuming that you know, but sharing it with her and see what she does with that additional information. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it's not a demand, right? It's just you're putting it out there from a need perspective. But as like mature adults, we have to be willing to hear the word no. And sometimes she may say, I can't do that for you. Mm-hmm. And then that leads obviously to a different type of conversation as far as the feelings that come up, and, you know, more of that vulnerability should come out in those situations so that at least, again, when it's not physical, it can strengthen the emotional intimacy.
Chris, we only have a couple more minutes left with you, but I want to ask you almost one final thing. So listening to you here, what I've heard you say, and it sounds like you're saying communication through this whole thing is paramount. What other things for Ryan and for our other listeners that have young kids that are going through the same thing, what are some other things that you could say you really need to pay some attention or some focus on, these sort of things individually and within your relationship, some time apart, some time that makes you happy, communication between partners? What other things should couples be looking at and paying attention to in this stage of life?
Yeah, I think just really being cautious about entrenching ourselves into negative thought patterns, right? We'll experience this flood of emotion, and that becomes a reality that then we dwell and sort of live in. And, you know, emotions aren't static. So try to find ways to enjoy fatherhood. Try to find ways to just break free with that older child and go to the park for, you know, even if it's just 10, 15 minutes, to really focus on building that bond and doing something that's emotionally uplifting with our kids. Because I think oftentimes we focus so much on ourselves, on our spouse, on the stress of it, that we don't leave a whole lot of time for fun. And then, you know, as men, engaging other men in their experiences as well, not feeling like we have to pull back and remove ourselves from just sharing that this is hard and it's overwhelming at times. And there's times where we're just in that dark room on our knees, broken down, asking ourselves, like, what did we do? How'd this happen? And that's okay. And that there's no shame in that. That doesn't mean we're a bad person or a bad dad or a bad husband. It means we're being a good human.
That's pretty good, because women do that all the time, and men don't do that as much, I don't think.
Yeah, men feel on. That's wonderful advice.
That's
both
very
parts
good
of that, Chris. Men feel like, and I feel like this, and I don't even have kids, but that whatever happens in our family, like, I feel ultimately responsible for it, which sounds like you just bypass on your needs because your wife is not feeling good. So you're like, just push it. Mm-hmm. Like, who am I to ask my wife to make me feel good when she's not feeling good? So I think men in general, and not saying women don't, but men in general have that, like, they'll sacrifice almost anything, and that it all comes, not all, but at the end of the day, they feel so much, what's the word I'm looking for? So
pressure.
Is it pressure or just responsibility to, like,
pressure,
really, really move the family through life?
Like, pressure, obligation. I think men feel that is imperative.
Yeah, but I think what Chris just said is amazing, to say, like, mm-hmm, like, men can admit defeat and be like, I don't know, I'm busted down right now. Like, I need help. This is what's going on. And allow your wife the chance to step into that and support you. And it's something I've done in my own life lately. I've never done this in my life. In probably the last 2 months, there's been times where I've really asked my wife, like, hey, I'm really struggling with something right now. And she's really stepped up to the plate and supported me. And it's given me like 100 times more energy and helped me amazingly the rest of the week, the rest of the month, whatever it is.
Ryan, you need to pay attention to that, because Brooks is a man and he's willing to ask for help. You have a real issue asking for people to help you.
Yeah, I fell asleep when Brooks was talking. But, sorry.
But so, Chris, we'll let you go, but Ryan doesn't like to ask for help. He doesn't want to let me help. He doesn't want to let Brooks help. He doesn't want to let the neighbors help. He just doesn't want anyone helping because he feels like he owes them something. But I think he's doing himself a real disservice.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, I think to some extent, you know, us as men, we all have that at different times, and there's only one way to get through it, and you just got to get over it and move forward and just say, hey, Either I break myself down and wreck myself emotionally and physically through this process, or I do the thing that I know is going to help me. And you kind of have that call out gut check moment to yourself, and then you just move forward and start asking for help and start naming the problems. And, you know, not always have to have the solution either. Just naming the problem sometimes can be just that freeing sort of relief from, you know, holding on to it. So I know it's hard, but we have to all as men support each other to move in that direction.
Well, Chris, I'm going to take this opportunity to ask you to help babysit. Well, I'll give you my address off air. And look, it takes a big man to ask for help, but it takes a bigger man to actually offer their help. So thank you in advance for offering.
You don't even say offering. You say for babysitting tomorrow.
Tonight, right? I'll be there in 25 minutes.
Chris, you're the
man. Marriage is on the line. We must do this.
Chris, you're the man. We appreciate you so much. For our listeners that want to find you, find more about you, where can they find the book and where can they reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, book's on Amazon, so you can just do a Google search for Back to Basics and it'll pull up. And then my website is just christaylormft.com, and so they can go on there and find a lot of additional information about it.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you very much. I'm going to keep you on speed dial for when I have kids someday. but I thank you so much for coming online and helping Ryan out here. And then, Ryan, I want to dig you more into this help thing after the break.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We talk about it all the time. We're not afraid to discuss our bathroom habits with you guys. I've said it before. I'm in there a lot.
Actually in the bathroom right now.
We're doing this from the bathroom. But right now we're focused on products in the bathroom for men and women. For everybody listening, this is what I like about Native products. It's formulated without aluminum, parabens, and talc, and filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, which is antimicrobial, shea butter, which moisturizes, and tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness. And best part, no animal testing.
No, the best part is that Native products work. Making the switch to a natural deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on odor and wetness protection. We tried it. We know these products work. And with 8,000 five-star reviews, it's the same as our podcast, by the way, 8,000 five-star reviews. That's another good sign. Native comes in a wide variety of enticing scents for men and women. Plus, they have new limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. And they offer unscented formulas and baking soda-free formulas for those with sensitivities.
You know what I love? No risk to try, buddy. No risk to try. Native offers free returns and exchanges in the U.S. and free shipping. Plus, I like the coconut and vanilla. It's Native's most popular scent, my favorite. My wife likes the lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and the eucalyptus and mint.
If I may, Brooks, I'm wearing the eucalyptus and mint right now.
You smell fresh.
Thank you.
I can smell you. You're like 4 feet away, but it smells fresh over there.
I use the Native soap, too.
Oh.
Head to toe, every inch of me.
Wow. Yeah.
Native has products for men, women, and teens. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code HMT during checkout. Again, that's for 20% off your first purchase. Visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code HMT. Back from break. This has honestly been one of my favorite podcasts.
Me too. And Ryan just... I think he's turning to a cocktail to survive this.
Yeah. I mean, I just looked at the clock and I'm like, by the time I get home, it's cocktail hour.
Is that how you're coping?
We should have had some like bourbon in here for him.
Tori, do we have any alcohol? Do you want some? Oh,
no.
You have to drive.
No, it's fine.
I want to unpack this story a little more, buddy. Thank you. I can't acknowledge you enough and say thank you for opening up, because I think a lot of people in our community can resonate with and they maybe hide their feelings, say, oh, having kids is great, it's great, it's great. Here's the raw and real behind having a kid. And that was the purpose of this show. When we started out, we said we're going to be raw, authentic, organic, genuine, and you're giving absolutely vulnerable, sharing, opening your heart to our community in hopes that this helps serve the community. So just want to acknowledge you again, buddy.
I would just say you feel guilty when you are vocally discussing how miserable you are for something that you fought so hard to get, which is a first and a second kid, going shelling out tons of money, putting my wife's body through everything. you feel guilty being like, I'm miserable. It's like, you know what you went through to get to this point? Like, this is everything you wanted.
But
like, shut up, dude.
But such is life. You work your ass off to get the job you want, and then you complain about it. That's okay.
Yeah.
Also, I want to touch on what you said about how it's been like a year-long sort of journey of leading toward a loss of intimacy, because the IVF thing, my wife and I have been through it, and it's not like IVF just ends after 2 weeks or whatever, and then, oh, boom, hey, we're right back to it.
Yeah.
Like, there is a couple-month hangover from that where she still doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't just end and okay, life is back to normal. Like, there is a drawn out period, and then if you're pregnant, you go right into that, you know, and then it compounds. So I think that's super important as well, what you mentioned, and just to empathize with you as well. Like, I know what we went through, but we didn't get pregnant coming out of it. But
so are you acknowledging that you had a similar experience with respect to your, what is now a very vibrant sex life that you have? Was that impacted?
He doesn't have a perfect sex life. You tell him.
No, but I'm curious.
He doesn't.
Okay.
He does now, but he didn't. We're going to talk about it more next week, but give him a little tease.
Okay, I'm an extremely happy man. I'll say that. But yes, I will say at that time, yeah, that was new to me too. I'd never been through IVF.
Yeah.
You know, both of us had no idea what to expect. It's amazingly difficult on my wife's body and what she's going through. And at the same time, you know, you do, as a man, you do still want to sexually connect, but I'm like, she just feels terrible.
Yeah.
Like, let me just like get like,
thank you.
Get on. Yeah. I, and then it carries on for months after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's difficult. And then we had to work to like rediscover and get our sex life to be back as a vibrant part of our relationship.
Yeah. But that is helpful for me to hear, because, you know, it's easy in theory to say like, oh no, you just say, I have needs. Like, no, feel like crap. Like, screw my needs. Like, I'm here for you. Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what you did too.
It's cause you love your wife, and I love my wife too. So you'll like, as a guy, I'll just, yeah. What do you need? Like, I will table anything.
Exactly.
But remember
that's why God created the iPad. I told you that.
Correct. But women are like that too. So there are times when they might get a lot of pleasure out of giving pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, somebody has to make a first move back into the space, you know, and that's a soft little dance that you figure out. But yeah, we did have a similar trajectory, and anybody else that's been through IVF, I would bet probably has, because it's not like you just do that. Okay, 14 days, boom, here we go. We're back at it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
It didn't for us anyway. So I want to dig into something, which is this question for you, and deeper than just like the surface answer, like, what is it? Why is it that you are unable to receive help? Like, really, what is it?
It's a good question. I mean, look, first and foremost, I would say, well, maybe this is a cop out, because I don't have family here. Like, I think it's easier to accept help from a family member, because they are your blood, they are your family. That is what family is for. And yes, your arguments can be, but that's what friends are for too.
No, that's
but just
fair.
Shut up for a second.
Fair.
Yeah. So like, family, because I don't really have family, neither my wife nor I have family in Los Angeles, we now don't have that ability to just say, hey mom, hey dad, can you just come over while we go out? Like, that's out the window. And so then you're left with friends, many of whom, almost all of whom, have their own kids, right? So like, the grandparent thing is great, because they're retired, and like, their grandkids are their lives, and they have nothing to do or don't want to do anything but help out and be with their grandkids. Like, it's killing two birds with one stone, because this is exactly what they want, spending time with their grandkids, and like, they're also helping you in the process. Whereas a friend would be kind of being put out by offering their help and having to now take on an additional burden when they have their own work-life balance that they're trying to juggle. So I think that's the biggest reason why.
But what if they're actually like in a really good spot,
mm-hmm.
where they're like, yeah, life is great, man. Oh, you're struggling. I've been there. I know what you're going through. How can I help?
I told you I wanted to send dinner over. I meant it. And you're like, ignored me.
Yeah. I don't know what to say, Amy.
And Brooks offered help and you ignored it.
I think I told him to send flowers to the Strep Throat Awareness Fund.
Staff.
Yeah.
I think it's fair what you're saying about the family because it is much easier. But I do think it's only two more months that it's going to be like horrendous. So why don't you let everyone help you?
No, like, look, we've had a few people that have sent food and that was really nice. But like, if I'm being honest, like the food thing is really nice and generous and appreciated. But like, I'm also... That's you're giving me money basically because like I have Postmates and Uber Eats and everything.
Yeah, but
on
this
my
could
phone.
Be home cooked too, and then you have leftovers and the whole thing. We're not sending over Chipotle, although Chipotle is delicious.
I've been getting it every Sunday. It's pretty amazing.
But I think you need to
double
let
chicken. Don't
people
tell
come
I get
over
the double, though.
And help with the kids, with the watching of the kids and the taking the kids.
Yeah, here's the deal. When you have a 5-week-old, like you can't really leave. You can't leave because you need to be breastfeeding the kid every hour. So, yes, like, but so you're never, you're always going to have that baby there. And that's fine, like, I guess, but.
I guess. Did you see how I said, I guess?
I'm just saying, it's like, it's great in theory. No, we'll come watch the kids. No, you can watch one of the kids. But like,
one is better than zero.
Yeah. I guess
you even said it like 2 weeks from now, your father-in-law is flying in and you're so looking forward to just having one, like even just that mental break.
Yeah. And we're getting out of town too. And we're going to stay in a hotel and like, just like it'll, yeah, we're going to watch movies and it'll be
just a change of scenery. Just
are you
going to
do that, mouth stuff?
That if the mood strikes, Amy. Yeah.
Wait, I have an idea. Can people call? Can you give the number, Easton? So people can call that have been there and maybe their little secrets or tips that we don't know, or they can always email us at men@iheartradio.com.
That's
but
wonderful.
Easton, will you give the number?
Yeah, 1 second.
Take your time, Easton.
Is there?
I'm going to give Gavin's cell just in case.
Is there anything else going on, Ryan, that we don't know? Like, you unpacked almost everything for us, but is there anything else that we don't know?
Do you have a few hours, or are we on time?
We've got time. Tell Brooks
I've
what's happening.
All the time.
So, he might be able to help with this.
Yeah, I'll launch into exactly what I know Amy wants me to launch into, which is we have a 12-year-old Yorkie, Yorkshire Terrier, named Gus that we've had forever. My wife had Gus when I met her. Gus had an incredible life when he was an only child, quote unquote. Then the 2-year-old came into the world, not as a 2-year-old, but as a newborn. But with the first kid came less attention for Gus, less walks, less petting, less everything. And you're a dog guy, so I'm dying to hear what you think about all this. By the way, happy belated 2-year-old birthday, Dakota.
Thanks, buddy.
Following your Insta stories. Nice to have a break from the workouts. And... so then the newborn comes and Gus becomes even more territorial than he was before, where like he is now fighting almost literally for affection and like sees these two babies, a toddler and a baby, as threats to his livelihood and his attention. And so his life has suffered. And we basically had this come to Jesus moment the other, like a month ago, where we're like, you know what? This is not fair to Gus. Like, we don't, it's not that we don't love him anymore, but we just don't have the bandwidth to be dealing with two kids and also giving him the affection and the attention and the walks and all the things that he used to be accustomed to. So we had what some friends have dubbed to be a very selfish moment, where I would argue it's a selfless moment, in that we went onto an adoption site to try to find a new home for Gus when he's lived with us for 12 years, found a woman who lost her husband 3 years ago, who is seeking companionship. She's lonely. Like, she saw his photos online, fell in love with him, made her background on her iPhone his photo the minute she saw it before she even contacted us, which was a little weird in retrospect. So we interview her over the phone and she's like asking all the right questions. She's just like, doesn't have kids, can just be one-on-one with him. We're like, you know what? This is perfect. She drives an hour away to come see us. We meet her. We're like, okay, yeah, we're going to give you Gus. We give her Gus, the bed, the food, everything. She goes home. And for the past month, Gus has been living with her and she's texting us saying, oh my God, he's everything I've wanted in my life. He's so amazing. Like, he sleeps with me, you know, all these things, until last week on Friday, my wife gets a voicemail And this woman's like 70 years old, like the most mild-mannered, like polite person. And she is aggressive on the voicemail and says, Gus has turned on me. I don't know what has gotten into him, but he nipped at my friend and he does not like strangers and he mouthed me. And I'm like, what? He mouthed you?
Mouth stuff.
Yeah. Gus, like at least one of us is doing mouth stuff. And so I'm like, okay. And so she calls us and is like, I need to drop him off. I cannot deal with the stress. Like, I'm done with Gus. And we had like finally turned the page where Gus brought a lot of stress in our life too, because our 2-year-old was chasing him around and like hitting him with like plastic golf clubs, and he was miserable, quite frankly. And then he when the 2-year-old would go down, then there'd be a UPS guy outside and Gus would bark and wake the 2-year-old up. Like, I'm ready to lose my freaking mind with Gus. No offense, Gus. So finally we get rid of Gus, and it's like he's off to greener pastures with this 7-year-old woman who's like filled the void of her dead husband. And now all of a sudden the tide's turning. Gus is coming back. And on Saturday, I greet this freaking woman out at the curb because I don't want her back in my house because I'm so pissed off at her. And she's like, here he is. This is really upsetting for me. And I'm like, yeah, okay, where's the bed? In the trunk? Just pop the trunk. I can carry the trunk, the bed in. No, I got it. Well, this is really upsetting for me. And I told my wife, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tell her, this is right before I walked outside, I said, I'm going to tell her, I'm so sorry that he attacked your friend and mouthed you. In light of the fact that he's been so vicious towards you and your friend, I've arranged for him to be put down tomorrow.
No.
And my wife was like, lost her mind on me. Like, I will not talk to you the rest of the weekend. Are you serious? Like, who are you?
Yeah, it's serious.
And I'm like, no. Like, I want her to have to live with the fact that she believes, I'm not going to get it put down, but I want her driving back an hour to Palmdale thinking, because of me, this dog has now lost his life. I want her to live with that. I did not do so to preserve my marriage, but I wanted to. And instead, I gave her the cold shoulder. I took Gus. I took the bed. I walked inside. And now he's back at home barking at the goddamn UPS driver.
Can we get the therapist back on the line? Producer Tori, can you take Gus?
And my wife can't breastfeed on the couch because he's jumping up on her. And
So you're going to keep Gus now? What are you going to do?
Has the woman reached back out and said, hey, I was sorry, I was wrong, I want Gus back?
No, she hasn't. She was probably scarred by the way I treated her curbside, but fine. So now I'm back to this like adoption site where I'm reviewing.
You don't have any friends that could take Gus?
Well, here's the thing. A friend this weekend says, I tell him the story. He's like, this is unreal. He's like, his wife comes. He's like, tell Steph the story. I tell the story. Steph, this morning, I get a call on the way in. He's like, you're not going to believe this. Like, they have three kids. He's like, we promised them that we would get them a dog if they got good grades on the report card. They have. Steph keeps talking about how she wants to get Gus. We weren't going to go buy a dog from a breeder.
Right.
Like, if we were going to do it, we were going to adopt. But like, Gus is like a good dog. Like, I know you. I trust you. Like, are you like, what do you think? He's like, I don't know if I really want this to happen, but like the kids do. Like,
do you think that's the universe? Give him Gus.
So he goes, yeah. But I would just ask, like, if we have to go away for vacation this summer or this or that,
say fine.
You would take Gus. And I'm
God,
like,
yes, yes, say yes.
Here's the deal.
What's wrong with you, man?
We don't want a family that has kids because he can be like, I don't know how he's going to be. And I don't want to live with like another person that 3 weeks from now calls me and is like, yeah.
You create
problems that aren't there.
Totally.
You totally create problems that aren't yet real.
I would rather find a single person who is going to devote their life.
She didn't want that. You tried
another
that.
Person. I have 25 applications that I'm sorting through as a second full-time job with like all these people asking me, is he non-hypoallergenic and all this crap.
So let me acknowledge you again here. So One, my heart breaks that you are at the point where you need to give Gus away because I know how much dogs mean to families. So that's not an easy decision for anybody listening that thinks Ryan and his wife just give this dog away. No, that's not how it happens. It actually brings validation to how much you guys are going through at the moment that you would even consider that and go through with that. And I also love that you said, like, you want to find one person that's going to dedicate their life solely to him. That just means that you love the dog so much. But you have a friend, somebody that you trust, who has three kids that really want this dog, I mean, that could be amazing for Gus and amazing for these kids.
I said to him, I'm like, let me give you an analogy. This is like if you bought my car off me. The whole time you're driving it, you're like, yeah, no, the car looks great. I trust you. You're great. 3 months, maybe 6 months from now, car needs a new air filter. It needs a new catalytic converter.
No one's going to blame you for that.
You're calling me being like, dude, the car you sold me needs a new catalytic converter. I'm like, look, Gus needs teeth extractions. He's a Yorkie. They have teeth issues. He's had extractions. That's going to be an issue. He's also 12 years old. Like, you may get 3-4 years out of him, but like, while he's been in perfect health up until now, as is the case with human beings, you're going to start to see more ailments in his later years in life. And if you're going to be upset with me that a year
have that
from now,
discussion.
Exactly.
Just have that discussion. Lay it out. This is what you're taking on when you take him.
He's going to say, you sold me a lemon.
No. He's going to say, okay, I got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I shake your hand as a friend. We're taking this on. He's a member of my family.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
But
want
you're not
Gus?
Even giving him that chance.
But do you want Gus?
I would love to host Gus for like a weekend to help you and your
I'm not
wife.
A dog person. I know. Write your letters in. I'm not a dog person.
You should be.
I know. I think I'd be like
I think you should take person. Gus for like a weekend.
I'm not taking Gus.
So where do you think, let's wrap this up, buddy. Where do you think all of this is going? How are you doing? Has this helped it at all? Like, what do you think your next step is? One, we got to get you a mattress.
Yeah.
That has to happen.
Yeah.
Go home, take a knife to that blow up mattress, stab that thing so you can't sleep on it.
I think mouth stuff would do wonders for the both of you. I'm not kidding. I know I'm sounding funny, but like, I think you need a little time. Yeah.
You may never see me again, any of you. This is my final farewell.
Well, at least you got to co-host.
Do you feel better?
America, thank you for listening. It's been nice knowing you.
I think we should do this again in a few months, though.
Because
I think things are going to be a lot better in a couple more months when the baby's sleeping.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Once we get to the phase where he's sleeping through the night, which we were able to do at 3.5 months with our first, then we're in the clear. If we could have our evenings, that's all. I want is to be able to like put both kids down, go have a drink, talk about our day, watch Shark Tank and go to bed.
I love what he said. I love what Chris said. Is when you have that alone time with your partner that you don't talk about the kids and you don't talk about work, that you like date each other again. I thought that was brilliant. What's like from this whole discussion today, what's one thing you're going to take and go and implement or try and make a change in either your life individually or your relationship with your wife? Like, is there anywhere where you've listened today and you're like, yeah, it's
two
time
things,
for that?
Two things. The first of which is Chris alluded to the fact that, I don't know exactly the words he used, but basically that negativity is kind of like negativity and it becomes a vicious cycle of sorts. And my wife and I actually this morning acknowledge that because it's become kind of like a competition for who's more miserable or who had to deal with the worst amount of stuff. So like first thing in the morning when I'm out there dead, like chugging double espressos, making Jude's waffle, which I can only give him 2 days a week now because he expects a waffle every day and he loses his mind when it's not a waffle, which I'm losing my freaking mind at. Avocado toast this morning, didn't want to eat. It's like, well, I'm supposed to prove a point to you that you can't have a waffle every day. That's your mom told me to do this. Anyway, the negativity is like my wife will come out and she just like, it's a thing where she comes out and she's like, he was awake from 2 to 6 and I couldn't do this and I'm exhausted. And I'm like, yeah, well, I got to do the bottle and he wouldn't drink the bottle and da, 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 da. And like now I got to go to work and then I have this meeting today and that meeting. And so you're kind of like going back and forth being like one-upping each other for misery. And I think we need to make conscious decision to be like, and my wife said it to me, like we have a short week and a holiday week this week. Christmas is coming up, my favorite holiday. Like let's just like go into it with a positive attitude and like, deal with it and be happy and try to see the positive.
You need to laugh a little and just laugh.
If I were with funnier people, unlike yourself, I would laugh more, but I'm not. The second thing was, truthfully, genuinely, that I've taken from this is I take some solace in knowing that Brooks, you dealt with some of what I experienced when Julianne was going through IVF and that it's like, I'm not on an island like this only person who feels that way. Because when I talked to Amy off the air as my pseudo shrink, she just tells me that it makes me feel like I'm the only person who feels this way. So
I don't do that.
And she then also denies doing it, which is even worse.
No, buddy, you're 100% not the only one.
Wait till you see how many people reach out to us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to touch on. You're not the only one going through this. For anybody that is listening to this that can resonate with this, please reach out to us. Here's our phone number, 1-888-430-1777.
I took my three nieces once. They were like 5, 3, and 1 for like a week. And I actually understood what depression was. Like, I was like, this, I cannot do this. Yeah. I was dirty. Like the dirtiness, like I just had mac and cheese on my shirt, and it was just a big game of please don't die, please don't die, please don't choke, please don't die. I'm not doing anything great for any of you because my whole thing is just don't die, don't trip, don't fall, don't choke, don't punch her, don't die. I hate myself, I hate myself, I hate myself.
Yeah, we tried to see friends the other night and they're like...
I was crappy at my job, I was crappy as their aunt, I was just in a load of crap.
Yeah.
Just, and then I got to say bye-bye.
Okay, so
someone else's job not to kill you.
So reach out to us. Let us know if you have any tips, or even if you just resonate with Ryan's story. That number again, 888-430-1777, or men@iheartradio.com is where you can reach us with email, or are always on Instagram at How Men Think Podcast.
And if nothing good comes from this other than Casper and maybe Tito's vodka coming to the forefront sponsorship wise, that would be really
great. But before we go, Brooks, can you give a little tease? Because next week, I just want to let everyone know, next week we are answering all your sex questions.
Ooh.
Like,
ooh.
It is the sex episode to beat all sex episodes. Brooks has a tale to tell, and we are going to reveal things. We're going to reveal things that no one sees coming.
Oh, Amy.
Mouth stuff galore.
I can't wait for you to reveal things.
You have a story about mouth stuff, Brooks?
Huh? No, but I will say, you were talking about sex before, and I was like, I raised the topic, or I don't know if I said it, but energetic sex.
Oh yeah, tell him a little. Just give him a little.
Give me a little tantric.
Remember Jaya? We all took the erotic blueprint. So having looked into that some more, energetic sex is sex where there's no penetration involved.
Yeah, it's like Sting does that.
That's like a little different what Sting does.
Oh, is it?
I don't know what Sting does. How come you guys know what Sting does and I don't?
Because it's legendary. Like, everyone knows what Sting in his 18 hours.
Yeah.
Might be like exaggerated. Okay. But well, Sting is tantric. Do you know the difference between energy and tantric?
I don't know the difference, but I'm aware of both concepts. But I'm just starting to like dive into this space and learn more about it.
They should do energy.
Do you know the difference between energetic and tantric?
I think so, because I think energy is
here,
very...
Here, bend over and I'll show you.
That's inappropriate.
What? Oh, God. HR is going to be... This show.
Sorry, I'm losing
well,
it.
Guys,
no, HR doesn't apply. It's fine. It's fine.
I am losing it.
I think energy would be great for them, though, because there's no touching. I know. I'm glad that my friend Lisa's two...
two young boys here in the studio.
Teen and preteen just walked in to hear this, but they know everything. They know everything. Those two...
They're miming it right now. This
those two
is really
teens
weird.
In there know way more than us. But I think energy is barely touching, right? But tantric involves touching.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe we'll get into more of this next week, but...
Oh, my God. I actually
I'm
can't wait.
I'm excited for that episode.
I know. Me too.
Jeez.
Ryan, bring your notepad, buddy. Well, dude, again, I just want to commend you for opening up, sharing this. I undoubtedly know that this helped many people listening to this at home. So high five to you, buddy.
Thank you.
High five to you for co-hosting your first podcast.
Thank you. Nice knowing you. I appreciate everything.
Right. He'll be back in 6 months.
I've not received a check for a single episode yet. Make sure that goes to the estate.
I just wanted you to know you made $89 in the last 6 months from this podcast.
$89. Go treat yourself, buddy. Go treat yourself. Fresh new haircut or a little like shave or something with some lavender. Something like that. It'd be glorious.
Yeah, thanks.
I have a place I can send you.
Okay.
Buddy, I appreciate you. Amy, as always. Gavin, Rick, Dimitri, we miss you, brothers. But I'm excited
they'll
for this.
They'll be here for the sex talk.
Conversation.
Actually, yeah, they'll be here.
next week. This is going to be whispering. I don't know, because we're trying to build suspense. Okay. That's it for now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We always appreciate you. If you think this episode could help a friend, please send it to a friend, somebody that has young kids. Please share it. Give us a review on iTunes, all that fun stuff, so we can keep doing.
Oh, yeah. Give us the review. I hate Amy. I know.
No,
bring it.
Amy, no.
I'm learning to take it. Yeah. Thick skin.
Till next week, guys.
Here we go.
Take care of one another. Love one another. And we'll see you right back here on How Men Think.